Welcome to another episode of Tour Podcast. On the podcast today, we got Daniel Myra, aka Danny Freestyle. How's it going, man?
It's going, man. Thanks for having me. This is super cool. The setup, everything, super cool. I'm learning here, so this is awesome. Thanks.
Appreciate you coming. We had Nick on the podcast last week. It's great to get like a different view of the same world.
Nick's amazing. Like he's a monster. He's somebody I look up to a lot. He's helped me through a lot, and I've learned a lot over the years with him as well. So very, very cool, you know. But so, yeah,
just a quick intro on you. You're also a black belt under Mikey
Musumeci. Yeah, black belt under Mikey Musumeci. You know, professional jiu-jitsu competitor around the world, and I've been doing this for quite a while. I'd say like over 10 years at this point now, and co-owner of Movement Art Jiu-Jitsu here in Warminster, Pennsylvania. And yeah, that's it basically.
Let's get started with a little bit of history of like, how'd you get started with jiu-jitsu first?
Oh, good question. I feel like I was playing soccer a lot, and I just kind of like was kind of falling out of love with it. I had I was disenchanted with the idea of having to pay for other people's mistakes like a lot. So if I would do something like really good and I'd make this pass and then they would lose it, I'd be like, man, I could have just dribbled up there and lost it on my own. Like, so it's like, if that's going to be the outcome all the time, I might as well just dribble and have more fun. But then this outcome's the same and we're going to lose it. So, which is kind of a pathetic mindset to have. But, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it's your fault, sometimes it's not your fault. I really love jiu-jitsu though, because everything is your fault. It's undeniable. And, so I was coaching, youth soccer as well. And one of the big things is like after every game, after every practice, whatever, there's always a parent that wants to complain about this, that, and the third. And, you don't get that in jiu-jitsu really, because I'm like, you know, because the parents are always like, oh, well, why didn't you play my kid instead of that kid? Or, you know, this kid is like this, or that kid's like that. It's their fault. And in jiu-jitsu, I'm like, yo, I told your kid to protect his neck and tuck his chin. Your kid got choked out. That's not a me problem. I told him. He didn't listen. So it's like there's not much I can do to help you there. So the accountability is really, really nice. I would say that was probably like the biggest thing, I think, that really made me initially like kind of fall in love with it. More from like a player's perspective, but also a coaching perspective. And then, I feel like the problem solving, the technical aspect of it, where it's like, it's an intellectual game that's played out physically. And that really, really appealed to me. So yeah, definitely that.
You can just tilt this up if you want, or the other way around. Up. Yeah.
Oh,
there you go.
I'm learning how to use technology here. So.
That's awesome. And just like we talked a little bit with Nick about it, but basically the way that you guys approach jiu-jitsu is like more of a mental aspect of it. It's like why things work, why, you know, why is the body positioning, like it basically concepts being your own coach, you know, a lot of that, which is not across the game when you go to other gyms.
Yeah, it is definitely something different than you normally would see if you walked into a jiu-jitsu gym. I feel like the standard for jiu-jitsu gyms right now, unfortunately, is like it's a young sport. It is growing, but as the sport grows, there's a trickle-down effect. So if you're at the top of at the cutting edge of the technology of technique and, you know, the conceptual approach to, you know, how to level up quickly, yada, 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 there's always a trickle-down effect. So it's going to take a while for ideas to catch on, for techniques to catch on, for organization and structure to catch on. And, you know, Nick and I kind of have a joke, like we want to be like kind of the WikiLeaks of jiu-jitsu, if you will. So finding the cutting edge and, you know, doing it and using it in competition at the highest level, like our coach, Mikey Musumeci, but also sharing that. And we want to change the way that jiu-jitsu is taught, the way that jiu-jitsu is thought about. And I think the standard is just kind of like, hey, here's a move and go drill it statically for quite a while. And then we'll roll live at the end, which is kind of like, doesn't really make sense in any other field. And then most gyms you show up and it's like, yeah, we're going to run around for 20 minutes and do cartwheels and jumping jacks and kind of dumb warm up stuff. So what we tried to strive to create at Movement Art is like, a completely different environment where we're like, okay, how can we get from zero to hero as quickly as possible? You know, and the environment that we wish we had when we were coming up through the ranks. And I feel like that's really like what we've created. And yeah, just kind of doing things a little bit differently, I feel like, is really paying off. We have a lot of proof with our students as well as ourselves as professional competitors at the top level.
That's awesome. So when I was listening to, I don't know if you heard the podcast with Travis Stevens and Lex.
A little bit of it. I didn't hear the whole thing.
There's one piece of it that I wanted to touch on, and that is like judo at the different weight class is like another game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with jiu-jitsu having different weight class too, like, do you feel like it's like a whole nother game too, or because of the way that we learn jiu-jitsu, that you guys teach jiu-jitsu of like basically frames first and defense, like basically protecting like your position, being solid before going for attacks, is it still the same game when you go across different weight class?
That's a good question. I would agree that the technical aspect of jiu-jitsu looks different from the lighter weight classes all the way through to the heavier weight classes. And I think there is a strong reason for that. But I think theoretically, the approach of, let's say, perfect jiu-jitsu, like theoretically perfect jiu-jitsu, if we could do that, is like, that is an attainable thing, or that is a, you know, conceptual like thing that can happen. So we should always be striving to play that perfect game. So, you know, every basketball player, they're striving to play a perfect game, even though it's, you know, low-key impossible. You know, soccer player, hockey player, everybody that has a game that's structured like this. So you want to be perfect. You want to play a perfect game. So therefore, there is an optimal way to move and to perform. Now, if you are a heavier guy, a lot of times, so in jiu-jitsu, let me back up here real quick. So in jiu-jitsu, if you have, you know, a perfect game and perfect structure and alignment and your frames are in the right spot and everything, like everything's really good, you're going to win, right? But anytime you make a mistake, you're going to have to compensate on some level with your athleticism. And that's the biggest point where athleticism is going to come into play when you're training jiu-jitsu or learning jiu-jitsu, right? Any gray area where you're like, I don't know exactly what I should do here structurally, or I don't know how to position my body to feel strong to my opponent. Like that's a moment where you're probably going to be, you know, compensating with your athleticism. Now, if you are much bigger as a human being and you're in a room where on average, everybody is much smaller than you, not only can you compensate with your athleticism far more often, and easier, but you really don't need to do things as perfectly because you have so much more athleticism, let's say strength and size, to offset any maybe mistakes that you're making at a lower level in the training room or when you're not taking things as serious. So larger opponents will tend to, and the larger weight classes, they'll tend to develop technically a little bit slower. So they're always further behind. So whatever, you know, hot techniques that are coming out, you're going to see those in the larger weight classes, let's say 5-10 years later. So it's like the trickle down effect of technique, because it's like, why would they need it? So it's like, they're not going to use something until they need something. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you'll start to see it in those weight classes. Whereas a much smaller opponent, they're in the room, and on average in every room, you're going to have a few opponents that are much bigger. And on average, they're training with people around the same size, maybe slightly bigger. So they're going to need to develop a system, basically, however they're doing it, to need to compensate with athleticism far less often. Yeah. Right. I'm a smaller guy. When I train with bigger people, I don't want to get crushed. I don't want to have more back problems. I don't want to get injured. And I want to, you know, kind of nullify their, you know, athleticism, as they're bigger, stronger, and more athletic than me quite often. And you can negate that with proper body positioning and alignment and so on. So I have to be more on point with that because I have less of an ability to compensate with my athleticism, especially against a larger opponent. So you see a much more technical approach usually at the lower weight classes versus the higher weight classes. But across the board, there's like a trickle down effect of technique in that direction, but also from competitors to non-competitors, and then from like world-class like coaches, we'll say, to, you know, the run-of-the-mill hobbyist coaches, somebody who just, there's so many people in jiu-jitsu. There isn't any like, you know, fact checkers in jiu-jitsu. There isn't like quality control in jiu-jitsu, unfortunately, yet. And so the standard is like anybody could just get a black belt and just go open a gym and just, oh yeah, I love jiu-jitsu, I'm just going to go do that. So yeah, there's a lot of that as well. And, you know.
So when did that click for you? Did that click? That it's like, I need to be positionally stable for everything to work for me. You know, like basically this whole system that you guys.
I think coming up through the ranks, I didn't have a coach or anyone like sitting there telling me like, oh, if you make this shape with your body, if your spinal alignment is like so, you can then handle a, you know, a larger, you know, weight disparity or whatever it is. You know, I had no idea. So coming up through the ranks, I'm just trying to figure things out. But I trusted that jiu-jitsu was like technique could overcome size and athleticism. And as long as that is true, then theoretically, like it never ends. So if I understand that and an opponent who's a little bit bigger than me understands that, well, now it's going to cancel out and then their athleticism is going to beat me. So if I'm twice as technical as them, I can now compensate for a little bit of that. If I'm 3-4 times more technical than them, well, now I can handle basically that player and be fine. And so I'm like, okay, so I started learning this, you know, early on in my career, and just kind of always searching for like, what's the optimal form of this position. And every spot, like I view jiu-jitsu as it's black and white. There is an optimal play that you can play. There is an optimal organization that you can have. And then there's, you know, a load of iterations inside that movement, you know, for sure. But
and it's still evolving.
Yeah, and it's still evolving. But so for me, I'm like, we take a scientific approach to jiu-jitsu, and we basically say, like, this is the best that we know and that we have right now. It is always evolving, and our opinion will change if we find something better. But for right now, like, make this shape, do this thing. And so we're just constantly trying to do that and find that. Then I met Mikey, and I was like, oh, there's levels to this. Yeah. This is crazy. So, you know, I'm like, oh, well, I can make this shape and go this way, and I could do this move versus that thing. And it was like so like zoomed out. And then I trained with Mikey the first time and just got absolutely just demolished. Like it's like training with Nightcrawler from X-Men. You're just like poof, poof. You're like, where, what, how, you know? And at the time, like I was like legitimately one of the best brown belts in the world. And I'm training with this guy, and I'm like, dude, this is stupid. Like, what am I even doing? Like, I should just quit jiu-jitsu. Like, this is crazy. And it was so inspiring. And to hear him talk about, like, oh, dude, like, your toe needs to be like this, and your spine needs to be like this. And, you know, it takes a lot to process that and be like, there's a whole other world that you can get to. It's not just about a move versus a move. It's about structure and body positioning. The same way if you're going to lift a weight, we can dive really deep into how your spine should be aligned for each lift and, you know, activating like your glutes a certain way and like your toes in versus out and whatever. And it's crazy. And I had no idea about lifting, you know, I still don't. But in jiu-jitsu, the same, you know, concept applies. And so Mikey just took that to a completely new level. And then I started being like, okay, what's, not just what's the best move versus each position, but what's the optimal body position, versus each move? What's the optimal way to structure and organize your jiu-jitsu versus each thing? I was like, man, this is crazy. So it's like so much fun, again,
is to it dive like into scratch that. Everything, go back to the drawing board, or is it more just like, let's, you know, adjust as we go?
Both. There's a lot of things that I just scratched. And I was like, this is a complete and total waste of my time.
Because you were a lapel player for a long time during brown belts, dude. Everything, like all the way up to brown, right? And
lapel guards are great, but there is a technical flaw in them where it's an upper body, it's a lower body, sorry, dependent position. So if somebody leads with their upper body exclusively and they understand how to unwind and stall and keep their legs back, you're going to get stalled out. And, you know, I invested very heavily into lapel guards coming up through the ranks, and I had a lot of success, a lot of false positives maybe. Mm-hmm. And do they still work? Can I still make them work at the top level of black belt? Yeah. But I want to have, you know, conceptually sound, theoretically perfect jiu-jitsu. That's what I'm striving for. And once I found out that there's a flaw in this system, I now have a choice. Do I use it just because it works and I can make it work? Or do I want to try to be perfect and do what makes the most sense regardless of what my opponent is doing? And I want to have the best organization. So for me, I wouldn't say I completely and totally scrapped it, but I basically completely and totally scrapped it. Still works though. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, I guess. So a lot of positions though, like that.
Yeah. So you go into like going and meeting Nick for the first time. You guys trained at Marcelo's together.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick was kind of a huge supporter and helped me when I went to Marcelo's. Basically was like, you know, I was living out of my van and I was like teaching and training at this other gym. And I was just kind of stuck trying to get there, but didn't really have the money to do it. And I was like going and going. I was doing day passes and whatever. And I got my brown belt and I was like, I got to go. And he was like, yo, if you're going to come, like, do it. If you're not, then just like be about it or don't be about it or like shut up, like kind of thing. And I was like, all right, I'm there. And I went, signed up and I'm there. And like Nick and I like had the same, you know, approach to things. And we both believed like there is more to this. Like it gets deeper, you know, it isn't just drill a move 1,000 times until you're bored. It isn't just this move is, works and then combo a couple moves together. Like you're playing Street Fighter, like, you know, just start button smashing and you're good. It's like there is a huge conceptual framework behind this, and that's what makes it really, really fun. A lot of people don't think like that in jiu-jitsu. So Nick is somebody that, you know, really kind of we vibed together right away, and we would drill together, we would study together, we'd break positions down together. And then when we met Mikey, of course, that just like blew up even further. So
you guys are known as the Bolo Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you bullied everybody.
we've tried.
Yeah, we tried. Who coined that term first?
Oh, dude, that's a good question. Who did? I'm not sure, to be honest. We both kind of, like back in the day at Marcelo's, it was like, yeah, I think it just kind of came up somewhere there, like sarcastically. And then like when we started competing and doing way more bolos, we kind of started joking around with it. And then I think it just kind of naturally grew. I'm not going to lie. I don't really remember if there was like an exact point. Nick might know better than me, yeah. But, I can remember a time where we were having a call with Mikey. We were all talking about whatever. And, Mikey was like, basically like, he's like, bro, like just go bolo everybody at Pans. And we were like, okay. And like, we didn't know he was just like kidding. And so we just drilled like every bowler reaction like crazy. And like you randomize all these reactions. So there's an optimal answer for each reaction. Once you're in the Baron Bolo position or the crab red position, there's an optimal answer for each reaction and each body position. If they're near hip, middle hip, far hip, and so on, it gets deep. And so we drilled all the positions. We would randomize them and just be like, answer this body position, go boom, 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 boom. And dude, we got really quick at all these, you know, we went and bullied everybody. And Mikey was like, I was kidding. Like what? but like, yeah, dude, like he literally was like, go bolo everybody. And we took that to heart and we did it. And, you know, we got our black belts after that. And, it's kind of a funny joke that we have, but, yeah, we tried to bolo the world.
That's a great story. So what prompted you guys to open up your own gym, especially at Brown Belt? You know,
yeah.
I mean, there are people who do that, but like basically what started that?
We always like wanted to, but I really think like it was the dream and then there was an opportunity and there was necessity and it all came together right at the same time. And that was right during COVID and New York shut down, couldn't train, everything shut down. I went from like living in my car basically to, Nick's, parents were moving and they were getting construction done, I guess on the old house or the new house. I'm not sure which one. And, they had like, there was like a closet in the back. So I like just during COVID, there's nothing to do. Everything is closed. I don't really have work. So I'm like, okay. So I basically just like lived in this like closet in this house that was abandoned, getting construction done on it. And we set up all these mats, and it was right down the street from the other house. So Nick would like, he lived in the other house naturally. And dude, we just trained all day, every day, like brainstormed, watched hours of footage, drilled for hours, randomizing reactions, and then just sparred and tried to kill each other. And sometimes we tried to kill each other. Sometimes we would just train. And then we would have some friends who would come over and we would train with them. And we would just like try to do all the cool stuff that we figured out, that we learned. I have so many videos on my phone from back at the time. We called it the Bola Bros house. And so many cool like techniques and systems, and we organized so many things. And, it, you know, it was really, really cool. And, yeah, like that was kind of, I feel like a really, big time, right there. I forgot the question, bro. I'm just like,
what made
now.
You open? The gym.
But yeah. So after that, we did that for like about a year, I would say. And we were just like, all right, let's build what we wish we had. We need a place to train. Other people want to train with us. We can't keep doing this in this house because they're trying to move in and the construction is about to be done. So we're running out of time. And, so we found a spot and, you know, we did it, and we were able basically to, we kind of thought about it too, of like, let's say this fails, everything goes to naught and everything tanks. How much life do we get out of it for how much money? And we looked at the return on the investment, and we were like, okay, so theoretically, if we think about it as if this completely fails, then we both paid X amount of dollars to just train for this much money until it ran out. Mm-hmm. So we were like, worst case scenario, at least we get to train for this much money until it runs out. And, you know, we were like, you know, we ball, like, let's go. And we did it. And, we opened up right during COVID, and really, really sketchy. And, we made it work. Yeah.
What was expectation versus reality here?
Ooh, expectation, I think, was we were going to start off a little bit stronger than we did. We had some situation where somebody basically kind of like screwed us over really bad. And we've had a lot of those type of situations, and, you know, we didn't know anything about business at the beginning. And, you know, there was a lot of learning, curves, I would say. And the reality of it was like, we were able to focus on trying to get the business running. And once we got it running, to focus on the training and most importantly, the people. And we made some really good connections with some really good, amazing people, who we got to train with. They were our training camp for a lot of those first tournaments, that they still are, you know, and we get better training, I feel like, with these people than anywhere else that we've ever been. So, just super blessed to make connections with these, people, to have a good team, a good support system, and to just always be trying to improve our jiu-jitsu, improve the business, and then improve our relationships with these other people as well. People that inspire us, like, dude, we do jiu-jitsu for a living. Like, I'm a professional athlete, like, technically, but like, these people have families, they have careers, like professional careers, they have houses and all these different things that they have to like manage and take care of. And that's a lot. And I'm like, they're still showing up and they're still training. So what are they getting out of it? And we're like, okay, let's make sure that they never lose that. Make sure that they continue to be able to get what they want out of it. And then some. Let's over deliver. And, that's what we always kind of tried to do. So
there's literally people that moved states to come train.
That's
with you.
Crazy, bro.
Like, how is that?
I
like
done it,
yo,
but,
let's go. Yeah. Or is it more like, oh shit?
Yeah. Like, no, it's like, yo, let's go. It's really cool. And I know, like, dude, I was this close to just moving, to just bailing on everything, just moving to Vegas and just training with Mikey as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And just figuring out the rest later. Like, I'm like, I was like, I got the car, I can go, I got wheels, we're good. And I'll just figure it out, you know? And that's kind of my mentality, is like, you drop me off anywhere with a backpack, I'll be fine. Eventually I'll figure it out. And so I really respect these people who are like, they're much more intelligent than I am. Obviously they're not just jumping in a car and going, but dude, like, they've moved states, like half the country over. A lot of people, they travel more than an hour on the regular basis to come and train with us. That's insane to us. And we're so thankful for them for that. And we really appreciate them for that. It's very, very cool. It's definitely not lost on us. But as well as the people who, you know, we lucked out or they lucked out or both live really close. And there's a lot of those. Yeah, like you, bro.
I'm like 3 minutes from
them. Dude, it's crazy. It's very, very cool. Yeah.
I talked about this, but basically it's like we're just trying to find a gym for Alejandro.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny how it all started, because it's like my wife was just like, you know, there's somebody bullying my kid. Mm. Like, I want him to beat him up.
Yeah.
Like and we found this black belt in Jersey who we took him to, like for maybe, I don't know, 8 weeks, mm-hmm. like once a week.
How did that go?
He taught him like basically basic things. Mm-hmm. And it was like a little bit like, okay, now it's like, here's the picture, now fix the picture kind of thing. So it was a little bit of a reaction.
Teaching him how to think a little.
A way to think. And once he learned how Alejandro learned, it was like pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't want to basically plop him into like a jiu-jitsu gym, because I did like a month of jiu-jitsu before that. Right.
Okay.
And so I was like, man, they do drills. They do like basically these warm-ups. It's like, mm-hmm. I know my son. He's just going to be like so lost and trying and like basically discouraged of this whole thing. I don't want him to do that. So that's why I wanted him to have some kind of base before I plopped him into like class.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes a lot of sense. And like then when he goes into that class, he feels much more comfortable, feels ready. That's really cool, yeah.
So then when we were talking to some friends who actually trained there, mm-hmm. you know, and they were like, oh, you have to go there. Like, this gym, it's so close. There are great people. There's people traveling all over the place to come.
Who was, like, the first person that, like, told you about
it? I don't know. I even know if you remember. What's her name? Oh, my God. Now I'm drawing a blank on her name. But she had a son, and she trained there with her son.
Was it Rachel?
Yeah, Rachel.
Okay. All right, I remember.
Yeah. So yeah, she.
There was like very few people that fit that description at the early stages, and you got in on the ground floor, like you were in early with us. I remember your first class. I was like, no way. I was like, bro, there's no way he's gonna train consistently, and there's no way he's gonna be able to like do this. I'm like, this is nuts. And I remember I was like, can you get your knees to your chest? Like do a cannonball to jump into a pool. And you were just like, we did a whole class on it basically.
Yeah.
And you were just like, nah, I can't. I was like, I don't know what to do. I was like, I've never learned this. I don't know how to help somebody with this. Like, this is wild. And bro, to see like how far you've come is crazy. And it's the coolest thing ever. And it's also just like, it's made me just shut up about so many people. Not that I said anything like, oh, there's no way, but it just like that was kind of my perception. People come in,
first perception. People is that come person in, gonna like, stick or not?
Yeah, like, they're not gonna stick around. They're gonna stick around. And like, I've been wrong so many times, and it's so cool now to just be like, I'm curious. Like, you think they will, you think they won't. Yeah. And I think it's really, really cool because, dude, not only did you stick around, but you're training like twice a day. You're like working your butt off. You're studying. You're like watching instructionals. You're drilling extra on the side. Like, and it shows and it pays off. Dude, you've lost like loads of weight. Like, so cool, bro. So cool. So, yeah, that's definitely very inspiring for sure.
Thank you.
So,
but yeah, like when I first got Alejandro in there, and I started going over there, and first my wife was taking him a lot, and mm-hmm. she was like taking notes. She was like super mom. She was like taking notes. She was like, this is Spider Lasso, let's practice that at home. And she was asking mom freestyle, it's like, what is this move again? Mm-hmm. And she was like, wow, you know this? Like, it's like she was trying to get her to start training, and my wife is like, no, I'm not about that.
Yeah.
But then when I started taking him and I started sitting down with some of the other dads, like I got Sasha and Steve and all this stuff, and they're like, you should come.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'll come.
Yeah, you're not like closed off to it, but then like you start training, you're like, whoa, this is not what I expected.
This is really cool.
Yeah.
And you know, now they're like, you know, best friends. They come over, we train all the time. So it's really cool to have that. And I it was really great to have another dad who I was just sitting down and I just threw the same thing. I was like, you should come. And they started training too. And I was like, let's go. Right. So it's just one of those things that is like a chain reaction. Mm-hmm. I think most of the gym.
That's there. The crazy part about movement art is like we haven't advertised. Like we just recently, like last couple weeks, like yeah. started working like with somebody to try to get some sort of like an SEO, like, you know, a presence online and, yeah. and doing some media and stuff like that. Like we've achieved everything we've achieved
word of
via
mouth.
Word of mouth, which is crazy, but also like how dumb are we for like never advertising? Like that's the dumbest thing ever. But yeah, like, so it's that kind of connection that you're talking about yeah. that has really, I feel, helped a lot of people, but also helped us as well. And that's what we believe. Like if you add value to people's lives in whatever way you can, like they're going to also want to support that. And you know, if like it's very symbiotic, like they're both helping each other, you know? So,
and that's what you guys wanted from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
To build a community, not just
100%
the jiu-jitsu gym.
We just wanted to hang out with people and train with people that like cared about learning and yeah. working hard. And like, we're just like good vibes, just cool yeah. to hang around, you know? Yeah. So it's a dude, I'll routinely be in the gym. I'll have conversations with people about everything. Like, some people
falling from the sky.
Yeah. Do a little bit of everything, bro. So it's good. I'm very, very, I'm lucky to be where I'm at, and to be able to have this be a career for now is wild to yeah. me, and very thankful for it. So.
So there's like sort of like adjacent to jiu-jitsu stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get your take on it. Have you watched them? What do you think about them?
What do you mean adjacent to jiu-jitsu?
Like, for example, slap jiu-jitsu, right?
Okay. Or like CGI.
Or like car jitsu. Have you seen
this? Yeah, that stuff is crazy. I'm not going to lie, though, as like a one-off, like, yeah, everything's kind of fun if you do yeah. it here and there. As like an actual sport or organization, like, that's just crazy. That's so insane. That's just, I feel like they're just doing it to be a meme online, but like I feel like there's somebody somewhere that's like training for this, you know?
100%.
Yeah, it's more spectacle. And I think that's something like people think, oh, we have to make jiu-jitsu popular, so yeah. we have to make it more of a spectacle. That's not true. Like if that was true, golf would not be popular whatsoever. And it basically isn't popular, but there's more money in like one golf competition than I'll ever see in my entire life. So it's not about making it a spectacle, I think. And that's, I think, the essence of like power slap.
Yeah.
Like they're just like, we want a spectacle. And I can't even watch it. I'm like, this is so ignorant. Like they're just smacking each other in the face. Like,
but yeah, there's like athletes out there, right? Like,
wow. I met one of them in the airport.
Yeah.
He just won the belt. He was coming back from Abu Dhabi or something like that. And I was like, oh, like congrats. He had this big belt because he's awkward yeah. to pack and a carry on. So he's just carrying it. This giant dude. And I'm like, oh, congrats. I got to talk to him a little bit. I wish I remembered his name, bro. He's literally the champion. And it was a cool interaction. And we just had this moment where it was like, this is wild. Like, but yeah, it's a spectacle, you know? And I don't think, you know, for me, what entices me about jiu-jitsu is the intellectual side of it. The same way that people kind of enjoy football, because, you know, if you ask me, I'm like, oh, like you just enjoy, you know, seeing dudes covered in pads just slam into each other over and over with helmets and whistles mm-hmm. and flags. And like, that's so lame. You know, there's, you're into that. It doesn't make any sense to me. But when you really, it's obvious because I don't know anything about football. When you unpack it, there's so many tactical things and there's nuance behind it, and you got to know like this, that, and the third, and like you got to have so many different areas like covered in the game to be like a good team. And I have no idea about any of that, so the game of football is lost on me.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody doesn't understand the intellectual side of jiu-jitsu, they're just gonna be like, this is just super lame, just two people in pajamas like hugging each other and like rolling around, like ew. Yeah. Like that's so lame. That's how I feel about football. I'm like, people covered in pads and tight pants slamming into each other over and over, and then we wait for like 3 minutes to right. then see them do it again for 2 seconds, and then like it's just so dumb. So but if you don't understand it, it's kind of whatever.
It's kind of funny you say that, because I played tennis like when mm-hmm. I was a kid.
Okay.
And now I, you know, I wasn't great or anything like that, but it's like I had a good serve, you know, everything.
Yeah.
And I remember after I got married, we went to the Poconos with my sister-in-law and her kids and all this stuff. And they went to play tennis. And I was like, ah, I play tennis. Yeah. Let's go play, right? This kid's been taking like private lessons and all this stuff, right? And I'm talking smack too. Like, yeah. Like it's like, oh, I'm gonna murder you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. To a child, by the way.
To a child,
yeah.
By the way, right? Like jokingly, but like at the same time, it's like, yeah. Like there's no way, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, the game of tennis is like completely different than when I was doing it back,
yeah.
back then. It's
especially
like,
if you haven't done it in yeah, a while.
Yeah. Right? Like, there's all these different things, and this kid had it all, right? And he just like, not only did he murder me, I threw out my back. Like, it was embarrassing. It was like, I was just throwing like the power serves and all this yeah. stuff. Sometimes he got it, sometimes he didn't. When he got it, it was like line drives. And on one of them, I went to respond, and my back just went out, and my legs was just like collapsed, right? And I was like, and the rest of the vacation there, yeah. I spent on the couch with like an ice pack.
Oh, no. So it was like that thing from the, he's like, wasted.
Yeah, wasted. It was just one of those. It's like, yeah, you think the game is the game, but really, there's yeah. levels to
there's
this.
Levels.
And
there's levels
once
like
you apply the science.
And then there's levels like tactically. So this is, you know, towards the end of my soccer career, something I was like unpacking way more is like, how can I just be in the right place at the right time and just angle the right way so that I can just use minimal effort and I could just get the ball and put it where it needs to go. And that was like the best I ever was in my career, you yeah. know? And, bro, like jiu-jitsu is kind of the same, but like yeah. tennis is the same. Like if you know how to position yourself, I'm sure like most sports, they're all kind of the same. So, but yeah, it's you got to know to appreciate it on some level, I feel. And there's so many sports that we don't know, and so we don't appreciate. But everybody has like maybe one or two that they kind of can appreciate and you know, watch and you know, vibe with. So,
outside of jiu-jitsu, what do you like to do?
I like to read a lot. I like to play a lot of chess terribly.
I'm with you.
I'm like addicted to the cheap dopamine of 1 minute games, and the emotional roller coaster of 1 minute games has me want to slam my head into a wall and like jump up and cheer like in the span of 5 minutes. I'm like, no, yeah, no. And like, yeah, it's crazy. But I feel like my opinion on it is like, 1 minute games, you don't really have time to think. So you have to do your thinking and your drilling ahead of time. It feels like rolling yeah. jiu-jitsu for me, basically. So when you roll live, like you're rolling hard, it's, you don't have time to think. So you better have drilled ahead of time. Your subconscious better know the shapes and the positions and what you got. Chess is like literally the same. And so it's so much fun for me, except for like, I don't really drill. I don't yeah. really recognize all the positions. I don't work at that aspect of it nearly enough because I can just go feel like I can compete all the time and just play terrible games over and over, and it's so
I'm
much fun
you.
But it's so
but
much
you still
it's so
kill
bad.
Me
it's so, yeah it's so bad.
We played a 1 minute game and
yeah
it, dude still had 30 seconds left at
yeah.
the end of,
yeah
timed out.
there is levels to it, so like yeah if you're like I study a little bit. Yeah. I work at it every day a little bit, and I'm still god awful. But you know, somebody who doesn't study or work at it as much, of course, like I'm still gonna do a little better than them. But then like my friend Tadaya, he's one of our yeah. black belts at Movement Art, and you know, phenomenal world class competitor. He's like 1500 in chess.
In bullet.
Bro.
I've studied some of his games. Like I went to his profile and started.
You can study his games there?
You could go back to his games, right? Dude, but like I'm like, this doesn't make
trouble,
sense.
Bro.
This doesn't make sense. And then it's like, oh yeah, okay. That's how
I
look
know you
at
could
it.
Do that.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go study all of his games.
It's
like,
always King's Indian.
I'm coming for
it's
him.
Always
like, I'm coming for you, bro. I'm gonna go study all your games and break every one of your positions.
But
down.
That's it's like looking at you and
on chess.com you can do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like looking at you roll, right? Like
there's no chess.com for that.
But like there's so many times that like, you guys will post like a reel or something like that.
Yeah.
And I would go and watch it mm-hmm. watch it, and I'm like, I still don't understand. Like that's the way that I look at Ty's games. Like it's yeah. like I don't understand what was the point of that.
Dude,
and then it all makes sense. It's like
Ty does things to me in chess that like it's
that
just
you do
that
to
Mikey
him
and- does yeah. Or that. I was gonna say Ty beats me in chess the way Mikey beats me in jiu-jitsu. And bro, it's just like, he just, like, we were at a tournament competing and we were both like, you know, in the Airbnb cutting a lot of downtime. I'm like, yo, like, let's play. He's like, no, we're not. I'm like, let's play. Fine. Wipes me off the board. And he beat me like multiple times, like so easily. And he just goes like this and just puts his phone down. He's just like, yeah, I'm good. And I'm like, let's go. I want to play again. He's like, why? He's like, why? Like, this is a waste of my time. He's like, you're so bad. I can't even play with you. He's like, there's not even a game that can happen. It's just me smacking you around the board. I would rather play online versus a robot. Like, you suck so bad at chess. Just give up. Go home. Just shut your phone off. Honestly, your phone shouldn't even work after you play that horrible game. And I'm like, okay. And so, like, dude, I've been studying, bro, and working, and like, he still kills me, but I'll get there eventually.
I play every single day, but it's like, I don't study enough.
That's the thing. It's so much fun to play.
So my rating is like the same.
Yeah.
So it's like ups and downs.
But that's like jiu-jitsu. So if you roll every day and you just roll and you don't think about it, you never think about the positions, you never break them down, you never think about what's optimal in each position, how to change your body positioning, your shape in each position, you're just like showing up and you're just playing, you're not going to get better. I know so many black belts that have just done that for 15 years and they get a black belt and it's like, oh, cool, okay. They're not getting any better, you know? You only get better when you learn more about the thing and you dig deeper. It's like saying we're talking about football. If I just show up to practice and I just do the thing over and over, like, I'm not going to get better. I have to at some point learn, here's the different plays. Here's what the different positions are for, what they do. Here's what, you know, and I think chess is the same. So it's so much fun to just play, but it's not as fun to maybe study and do the work and drill. Mm-hmm. But it is way more fun when you win when you're playing. And so I really like that part. Yeah. So I'm willing to go and do the drilling and the studying part to get that feeling more. Now, I don't really necessarily like care enough about chess maybe to do that part all the time. I'm getting better at it, but there is a huge correlation to like the higher, like the best I've got is like, I don't know, almost 1300 in like bullet. And there's a huge correlation to just studying positions and solving puzzles and tactics and all this stuff and then going and playing. Yeah. And my rating goes, shoots up. And then I'm like cutting weight. I'm not studying. I'm not working. I'm not paying attention. It's like late at night, brain fog. And my rating just like, just dude, tanks right back down. One night
is like 200.
Yeah, you just go on a bender.
On a bender. It's like, why? Why? Yeah. And then while you're playing, I start thinking, it's like, no, yeah.
I shouldn't be doing this.
This is the last one, right? And it's like my thumb just automatically goes new game.
Yeah, every time, bro. This is just turning into a therapy session. 100%. For like recovering
chess addicts. Oh, God.
Like, yeah,
no, this is great.
Yeah, for sure. So but jiu-jitsu is the same, I feel. So
going back to other things that you like mm-hmm. reading books. I love audiobooks.
Yeah, but I do both, but yeah. I'm a strong audiobook or reader. A lot of them I do both. I'll be listening to the audiobook and I'll also read and I'll go back and forth. Or sometimes I literally will have the audiobook playing while I'm reading. Like, I'm dyslexic. I grew up with kind of a lot of like learning disabilities, whatever, in school. It was rougher for me. Reading is something that has always been tougher for me to do. Like, I'll read the same line 3, 4, 5 times in a row. And then I know I'm reading the same line. I'm getting mad at myself for reading the same line. And they'll use your finger. I'm like, I'm using my finger, dude. Whatever. So it can be tough for me. So having an audio book on while I'm actually reading, that's helpful. If not, sometimes I just take an abnormally, obnoxiously long time to read a book. But I've learned so many things from so many books that it's just so invaluable now that, okay, if this takes me 3 months to get through this book because it's thick, that's what it's going to do. So I do both though, yeah.
What are some of your favorite books?
Ooh. Like, what topic? There's a lot of different... I like a lot of nonfiction.
Really?
I read a lot of books.
Yeah. Oh, wait. So I'm the same way. Yeah. So I don't like fiction.
Okay.
At all.
I like fiction. I like science fiction. I like fiction. It's fun. Doesn't make me any smarter, really, as a person. You know, helps your imagination. You need a break every once in a while. You need to watch a movie. You need to
read something fun.
Every once in a while, for sure. So every once in a while, I'll do some science fiction or fiction or whatever. Okay, cool. Normally, though, I'm reading a lot of, you know, science, history, you know, some business stuff more. A lot of psychology, and I was, for years now, I've kind of really gotten into learning how to learn. From a very young age, I've always been very, very fascinated. Like, why do people do what they do? And like, what makes them tick? And so I think that's the topic that really like kind of grabs me the most, for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, there's so many good books, I feel like, in that field that have really, really helped me develop as a person, as a coach, as an athlete. But yeah, there's a lot of different books. Off the top of my head, a few that were really fun.
This one.
I did. I brought you that one. This is a really fun one. Angela Duckworth, grit is basically, you know, it's the title to, you know, to have grit, basically. It kind of can teach you, you know, how to have that, but it's also, it breaks down, like, you know, some people say, oh, are you born with it? Are you not? And this book talks about that. It's a very, very good book. But yeah, this was one of them. I feel like, there's a book about negotiation that I read called Never Split the Difference.
I love that book.
So fun. So fun,
that.
Bro.
Dude, I've used that on so many like salary negotiations, mm-hmm. and everything like that. That just, yeah. got me like up there.
100%.
And it's just like that whole mirroring tactic. Dude, like so staying cool, quiet, right? and people get uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that book.
That book is so much fun. I try to, it's teaching you how to just be a better communicator. And that's something that, you know, I needed to learn, and it helped me a lot. And so that book was so much fun for me. That was a very, very impactful one for me, for sure. I just recently finished this book called The Body Keeps the Score. Another amazing book. It's all about, you know, trauma and how your body holds on to trauma and stuff like that. So that was a really, really a good book as well. There's so many, man. It's hard to think off the top of my head, right now.
I like reading
a lot,
too. Like,
a lot of history.
Yeah.
A lot of history as well. So like, there's a book called The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich that took me a long time to get through. It's very thick, but I was like, how, this is like, this sounds like some crazy spy movie. This sounds like some conspiracy theory, crazy stuff. It's like, no, this is the history of how the Third Reich came to power and the crazy stuff that happened and how they invaded different countries. It's just crazy. So that book was mind blowing. Another one is, Ghost Wars, I think by Steve Cole or whatever. Really good book as well. The history of the CIA. And that one was crazy too. Another same thing. I'm like, how is this not like a crazy, this is a movie. Yeah. This isn't real. And then you like look it up. It's real. It's very real. And, yeah, it's just so, it's so crazy. So history, I feel, is so much crazier than fiction sometimes. So when I want to read like, oh, like some science fiction, whatever, I find some crazy story in history and then I learn about it and I read about it. And that gives me that entertainment kind of feel. So that is definitely something that I'm more into. A lot of crazy type of stories like that happened around that World War II era, of course. But then there's, you know, recently I've been reading a lot more about, you know, the Cold War and, you know, the FSB, the KGB, and, you know, the CIA and a lot of things around the intelligence communities. So that's been really fun to learn about. There's so many different things. I'm always trying to find something. I don't know.
One that, for my professional thing that really helped was Getting Things Done.
Good book.
Really good. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, 1 Minute Manager. It's like a quick one, like a 2-hour book or mm-hmm. whatever. But
yeah, I had somebody recommend, actually, my friend Omar, he recommended like The 1 Minute Manager and Who Moved My Cheese. And he's like, you got to read these books. They're great. And I'm like, okay. And I read them and they're definitely good. But, I can't remember now. There was another one along the same line that I was going to see if you read as well. I can't remember it now. I'm sorry. I have no memory.
No, it's fine. It happens all the time.
Yeah, I have it at home. I'll bring it for you next time. But there's like, I have just like a wall of books at home. And my fiance is like, why do we need more books? Like, why do you keep doing this?
You should
like,
see our library.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, you got to show me after. I'm curious.
My wife is a big reader. And,
nice.
And when I remember when the Kindle first came out,
mm-hmm.
she sold so many books on Amazon back when it was just like selling books, and wild. She sold like boxes and boxes of books. Whoa. And we still have like tons.
Yeah.
Like, we had shelves that were just, like, concave.
The shelves are just bending. Yeah.
No. She reads so much, and you know, like, I really look up to her for that, because it's like, I don't have that.
Well, she's that super thing. Smart. She speaks, like, five languages, something crazy. Like,
she's amazing.
Yeah, that's nuts. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I have this, like, you know, I eventually one day I would like to have like a library of just, I can walk in and be like, I can look at all the books I've ever read.
Yeah.
And I just on the shelves now that I have, whenever I read a book, I make sure like I try to buy it. And so I can look at them and I'm like, oh, like it jogs my memory. Yeah. I'm like, oh, what did I learn from this book? And then I pull up my notes app and I go back and I look through the notes. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And I probably do that every day, I think. And I'm always trying to, you know, learn, but also like just jog my memory on things that I've already learned, you know? And, I've really learned like how dumb I am to the point that I try to not have an opinion at this point, because I don't really know enough about anything to make a real educated opinion on things. So jiu-jitsu, I'm a professional, I'm an expert. I have a very strong opinions about jiu-jitsu. All right. Basically everything else, I just don't know enough about things. So I'm very open to just changing my opinion or my mind based on what's the science and the evidence and the facts, like what do they say? And so the more I start to learn about it and read about it, it's, you know, my mind is always changing. I'm always learning more things. And I think there's so much like controversy. There's so much division in this country, in even personal relationships, everywhere that I see, where people are just, they get these opinions and they like hold on to them. And then there's so much division online. It's so easy to just make people feel a certain way and just show them stuff. And people just believe it. They don't really have the time or the curiosity to fact check things. And some of it can be very harmful and kind of damaging. And, you know, I just try to like, I see these things, but then I always like kind of see the other side as well and kind of stay in the middle. And
so how do you do that with books? Because with jiu-jitsu, it's like, okay, you know, is that, mm-hmm. you know,
jiu-jitsu, I'm an expert. So yeah, it's taken me years to get to that.
You can
point.
Look at something and like, you always tell us this, right? Like,
yeah.
Like just look whatever's on law. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, it's like, are, you know, is this structurally safe? Yeah. Is this, you know, like, is this going to actually work? You know, and all that stuff. But with books, it's like, man, this guy sounds really smart,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, is what he's it's saying.
It's easy to sound smart.
It's what like, he's saying, like, legit, or yeah. what he's saying, like, not, like, I'm thinking, like, Malcolm Gladwell, mm-hmm. really good books,
yeah,
really good.
Very fun, all his books, big fan, fun yeah, to read.
Great books, but then he also talks about, you know, the repetition of 10,000 times and mm-hmm. all this stuff, which is like...
I think that's taken out of context, though, because okay, I think the studies are there for outliers and that yeah. 10,000 reps and all that, like, the studies are there, the science is there, it makes sense, but I think... it's taken out of context so often. And I think, you know, it's misrepresented, I think, a lot. But I would still say it's really good. And Malcolm Gladwell is somebody who, you know, great author, very fun books. I've read all of them. But you also kind of have to take it with a grain of salt to an extent, because he said, hey, here's these studies. Here's what we're learning about this thing. And he gives you like, hey, here's a glossing over real quick of this topic.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go deeper into these things. But it's not like he's got everything accurate either. And he's not an expert in any one. He's an expert in sharing stories. Yeah. And I think that's what he does so well, is make you curious. And the point of his books is to make you curious about the world around you, about how things happen. And I think he does his job very well in that. Now, just because I've learned something from his book doesn't mean that it's like the end-all be-all truth and the deepest part of that topic. And there's so many of the studies that have come out that like, here's a glossing over from Malcolm Gladwell, but this topic actually goes so much deeper if you really look into that. So I think it is important to look at people's credentials and say, what are they? Because anyone can sound smart, but to truly be an expert takes years. It takes a long, long time. And I have to respect that. And if we don't respect expertise, we just respect people's opinions for sounding smarter. I mean, how many people are insanely intelligent and they just lack the ability to communicate that, you know, perfectly? It doesn't mean that they're dumber. It doesn't mean that they're not an expert. It doesn't mean that they're wrong. It just means that they're not able to communicate as well as someone else. So always look at the credentials, I feel like. And when I look at nonfiction, especially, I see, well, what am I trying to get out of this? Oh, this is a journalist. This is someone who is going to be sharing stories, mm-hmm. and they're very good at it. I love that. That's going to make me curious about these stories in this region. And then what do? I go and read multiple books about that, you know, story, about that region, about that time period. And then you get a zoomed out, much bigger picture. So, you know, you're talking about history. You're talking about another one is like physics. I like to read like physics books because I'm very, very
universe
dumb.
In a nutshell. One of my favorite books.
Stuff like, I'm like, this is incredible stuff. This is so cool. It's conceptual. It's fun to think about. But like, I don't know anything about it. So I'm not going to read a physics book by, you know, Joe Schmo down the street. I'm like, okay, who is like the leading minds in the physics world? Who is the who's who of who really knows? And I'm like, okay, well, let me read their books and see what they say. And then you start to read a bunch of about these different concepts and things. So I'm trying to learn a little bit, but I'm going to learn from people who have actual credentials, from actual, you know, people who've been there, who've done that, who are actual experts. And we have to respect expertise. So I think if I try to stay away from books of like, oh, here, I'm going to talk about, you know, this health issue in America. And I'm like, looking at it, I'm like, okay, are they a doctor? Are they an actual medical professional? Have they been working in this field for years and years? It's like, no, they're just some journalist.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's very cool. They're going to be very good at sharing a story. And maybe there's a lot of credibility to the story. Maybe not. Maybe it's the whole picture. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But you got to look at it like that. But if you have somebody who's like, I'm an expert in this, everybody who is an expert in any field, they always specify and they're very cautious to talk about anything like on the other side of their scope of expertise.
Yeah.
And you hear this with like every intelligent person that I really listen to. And that's something that's so inspiring to me. It's like, they'll talk so strongly about this, their scope of expertise. And as soon as they get outside of that scope, they just go, well, I really don't know exactly what it says, but this is my understanding of it. But you should go and talk to so-and-so. You should go and read this. You should go like, and it's never like, oh yeah, just do this, coming from a place of like superiority. But if you talk to them in their area of expertise, they have this almost like cocky bravado that's like, you know, they really, really know. Yeah. And as they should, you know?
That's great. So this is a good kind of stopping point here.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's amazing things between books, chess, jiu-jitsu. So what's next for you as far as competing, as far as like anything else?
Dude, I've been learning about my, you know, health and the injuries that I've had and just taking some time to really try to, you know, fix myself, fix my health, my, you know, diet, my recovery habits, my working out, everything, trying to get back in shape. So I'm starting to get there now and feeling like I'm recovering and getting healthier habits and learning about all that. And so I feel, you know, a few more weeks, month of this and trying to jump right back into competition and hit the ground running. I don't have anything on paper yet, but I'm definitely trying to hit some super fights this year, trying to compete a lot around the world. And, you know, I have a long list of goals that I want to accomplish this year. So just every day kind of chiseling away at those. So how about you? What do you have coming up? What are your goals?
New York coming up.
Let's go. I might do that with you. I would like to hop in if I can.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I would love fun. That.
That'd be sick.
But yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, hey, let's go have fun. Let's go as a team,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm training now at a lower weight bracket,
mm-hmm.
which means more competitors
mm-hmm.
in the weight bracket.
You're moving a lot better though, too, because you're a lighter weight, which is nice.
Yeah. So I'm trying to, you know, build up that, mm-hmm. that competition, you know, speed into it. And I think I have trouble a lot because I tend to overthink positions
mm-hmm.
and then I just get crushed.
Real quick, I have one question.
Yeah.
This went by so fast. This is great, fun conversation. I have one question though.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think overthink? I was just having this debate with a friend of mine yesterday. Yeah. Do you think overthinking is a thing? Or do you think, I have it, my opinion of it is overthinking isn't real. I think that whole like, paralysis by analysis kind of like, yeah, sure, that can be real, but like overthinking in itself I feel like isn't real. I feel like it's not enough thinking. So if there's any situation that you could overthink, I think you can think your way out of it. It's like a weird opinion I have.
Yeah, it's the same thing that we just talked about, like with bullet chess, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have time to think, mm-hmm. right? You're in this position, and some positions are not meant to be hang out in. So given that is like either I'm gonna try to like, you know, stick to a position and think where I'm going next, and then which gives the other player more turns.
You're saying, right? In like a jiu-jitsu context then.
In jiu-jitsu context. Yeah,
okay, I agree with you then. Oh, okay. You got to overthink or like think your way through thoroughly all the problems before you get into that situation. Yeah, for sure.
100%. Yeah. But like you're saying, like in general, overthinking.
We were talking about in general because my friend was like, sorry, I just finished up real quick.
No, go for it.
My friend was he's like, I'm overthinking it, you know? I'm overthinking it. And then he keeps talking about it, but I'm overthinking it. And I was like, doesn't sound like you're overthinking it. It sounds like you're underthinking it. I was like, dude, every situation where you say you're overthinking is just a not fully thought out thought or opinion or position. And I'm like, I think like we all do that from time to time, like way too much is we just say we're overthinking it. And what we're really saying is we've underthought this. Hey, here's an underthought idea. Can we talk about it? And I was like, oh, that was kind of interesting. It was just a fun conversation I had yesterday, though.
There's definitely like personality types that lend itself to overthinking. Mm. What I consider overthinking? Overthinking, like to me, is like especially like in the professional world, like you have people who are scared to commit to something and overthink the situation so they don't get anywhere, right? And there's that personality or that it has to be perfect before they commit to it.
So do you think those people are overthinking the situation or not thinking enough about the situation as a whole? Because it's like, man, if you really think about it, is it really that important? Do we really need to overanalyze it like this?
But that's their personality type,
right? So it's more a personality thing, you think?
We go through these things at work. That, I don't know if you ever heard of DISC.
No.
All right. So DISC is a way of... you know, analyzing a person, they give you a test.
Okay.
And they give you a profile at the end. Mm-hmm. And this tells you whether you're dominant, you're innovative, personality type, right? Mm-hmm. And that personality types, then you can have a whole profile. Are you like closer to like a DI or are you like more like a strong D, dominant, like you need to have it your way? Are you a person that needs to compute everything and have like be safe about it and all this stuff? What does that mean to you? You know, and it's like amazing at work. We have profiles for everybody and they're open to everybody. Whoa. So if I want to talk to the CEO, I can go to his profile, see what he is. And then I can say, you know, oh, he really is this type of personality and doesn't like to be surprised by things. So therefore I'm going to talk to him like in the lunchroom and say, hey, I want to come talk to you about XYZ. You know, and then this way he's sort of prepared for it. So when I come to him about this, it's not some surprises.
That is really smart from a company perspective. That is a very, very cool
idea. It's really, really cool. And especially now with AI, you know, like I literally take people's disk profile, plop it into AI and be like, yo,
bro, you're another level.
Here's this guy. You know, here's what I wanted to talk to him about. Mm-hmm. How do I approach this on this side? You know, blah, 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 blah. If it's like really, really complex topics.
That is
so this way, it's like it helps me get a leg up into like understanding how people. But with going back to the overthinking, because I'm overthinking this.
I like it, though. I'm about it.
It's all about personality types. And there's definitely those people who are like very reserved, very, very like, you know, like. They have to make it perfect, where I'm more of like, fail fast, let's get iterations going, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter, right? And it's like, so what's someone got affected by that? It's like, talk to them,
communicate. Don't let perfect get in the way of good enough.
Yeah, not even that. It's like, you know, you're iterating through things. The only way to get this out going for me is to do it fast and fail at it fast if I need to fail. If it didn't fail and it went perfectly, move on.
Right? Yeah. So it's like a numbers game that just we got to fail a lot of times to get the success.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the same for jiu-jitsu. I'm just losing matches. I've lost so many matches.
Story of my life too.
I got some years on you in that. Bro, I've lost any submission you could think of. I've been stuck in it. I've tapped to it. I'm with you on that. That's awesome. Yeah, dude. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always fun chatting with you, having a good conversation. At Danny Freestyle on Instagram. The L is a one though, so the L was taken. So you know, one L I didn't take.
All right. and Movement Art Jiu-Jitsu
at Movement Art Jiu-Jitsu on Instagram as well. MovementArt.online is our website. Come train with us sometime.
MovementArtJiu-Jitsu.online.
Yeah, MovementArt.online. I think it is actually.
Okay.
I think it's MovementArt.online. Just search Movement Art. We should pop up.
All right, dude.
Hey.